and welcome to the Musical Malice Podcast. My name is Nick McLam. I'm one of your hosts for this episode. I wanted to first apologize for the audio on this very beginning of the discussion. Towards the middle, I guess it picks back up and it starts recording the microphone again. I'm not sure what was going on. But we do have a great episode for you today. You can always reach out to us on Twitter at the Musical Malice handle. And you can always send us an email at themusicalmousepodcast@gmail.com. I hope you all enjoy this episode on the wonderful classic Alice in Wonderland. We're so happy with it. And I hope you all enjoy it so much, just like we did recording it. We have a special guest on it today, too. So I hope you enjoy today's episode of the Musical Mouse Podcast, where the music is the magic. This week's discussion is on the 1951 classic Alice in Wonderland. Joining me is who's in the room?
Tyler.
I'm Carson.
And we have some really big fans of Alice in Wonderland here. And it's not my favorite Disney movie ever, but it's not the worst Disney movie ever. It's been quite some time since I've heard a lot of these songs, to be honest. And we were listening to them in my car. And just listening to them, they just sound so weird and so odd. And I just thought it was so fitting for us to just do this, and Carson's one of my students in my group here at church, and I'm just so proud of her, and she loves Alice in Wonderland, so, and she's going to college. I'm very proud of her for that. So
I am. I'm going to college.
Yeah, and so she has an Alice in Wonderland keychain.
Yeah.
The lanyard thing, so it's very much proof here that she loves Alice. Now, this movie came out in 1951, so Peter Pan, last one we did, was 1953, so this was 2 years before. Obviously, there was definitely a lot of weirdness surrounding this movie. It was very weird. Some of the history, you know, there was over 30 songs written for this movie. Many of them found a way into it, if only for a few brief moments. Alice in Wonderland would boast the greatest number of songs included in any Disney film, but because some of them were lasted for mere seconds, like How Do You Do and Shake Hands, We'll Smoke the Monster Out, Twas Brilliant, the Caucus Race, and others, this fact is frequently overlooked. The original song that Alice was to sing in the beginning was titled Beyond the Laughing Sky, which, as we found out in Peter Pan, was supposed to be in there, and it was called The Second Star of the Right. The title song, composed by Sammy Thame, was later adopted by jazz pianist Bill Evans and featured on his Sunday in the Village Vanguard. What stands out to this movie just for you when it comes to listening to music? Because I have no emotional attachment to this movie at all. So for you two, what's your emotional attachment to these songs in particular?
But so I just found out looking at the little history of this movie that even though those that made the film, including Walt Disney himself, didn't like the film, though it did receive an Academy Award nomination for Best Original Score.
Yeah, that's impressive in itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's interesting that it's got a lot of classical music in it, and it's a lot of music that doesn't really have words.
Yep.
Like, a lot of it's just the background music, so that's really interesting to me.
The soundtrack was 75 minutes long, and the movie itself is 75,
mm-hmm.
So it's the entire movie.
Yep.
Which is, to me, that's bananas, because
mm-hmm.
You're talking about Peter Pan, the entire soundtrack is basically the entire movie, so. Let's read some of the songs. Alice in Wonderland, the title song, In a World of My Own, Alice's theme, I'm Late, The White Rabbit, Sailor's Hornpipe, The Caucus Race, How Do You Do and Shake Hands, Tweedledee and Tweedledum, The Walrus and the Carpenter, Old Father William, Smoke the Water Out, All in the Golden Afternoon, A-E-I-O-U, Twas Brewing, The Unbirthday Song, Very Good Advice, Painting the Roses Red, Who's Been Painting My Roses Red, The Unbirthday Song, The Reprise, The Caucus Race Reprise, and Alice in Wonderland Reprise. I'm not going to read all these 30 songs that were supposed to be in this movie but not used, but there is a lot if you can understand that. What's your favorite song from this movie? And why, I guess.
I mean, I like the first song that Alice does, the In a World of My Own.
Yeah.
Because it kind of sets up the whole movie and, you know, starts the whole dream sequence, if you will. But I also really like Painting the Roses Red.
Yeah, I've forgotten that song in this movie. That and I guess that. Tyler, what's your favorite song from it?
I've got a couple of them. So, The Caucus Race, because the dodo bird is a big dingus.
I have to agree there.
Like he's like cheerio, cheerio. And then
It's all nonsense. It's great. Mm-hmm.
And then I do like All in the Golden Afternoon. Just like the different voices coming together in harmony. The Unbirthday song has got to be one of my favorites. Because just that whole entire little sequence of that movie is just great. Like, it's funny.
And we were talking earlier how back then every movie was basically a genre of its own. Aristocats was jazz. Peter Pan, I'd just call it kind of just classical, I guess. What genre would this consider? I mean, it's whimsical, the whole thing is.
It's mm-hmm. very whimsical. I would say it has more of a classical feel to it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because in the beginning, like, it's supposed to be very prim and proper, like her mother's trying to make her very prim and proper, like in the pay attention in the very beginning.
And I guess that's what's interesting about the movie to begin with, because music-wise, you know, Disney has always, I guess more so now in this day and age, a lot of their movies have went away from, they not went away from the music, but the story isn't told through the music. It's kind of told just through the dialogue. In this movie in particular, I feel like the music kind of tells the story.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't know which one kind of best does that, to be honest. I know I like the Caterpillar song, if I'm looking at it now.
That one is kind of weird to me.
It's weird. I think the whole movie in general, like, that's why we sit here and discuss this movie, but at the same time, it's just like, it's a wild movie to begin with, because it's not anything that they make anymore. They don't make movies like this anymore. Mm-mm. This is like the first Tim Burton-esque movie ever made, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It is. Mm-hmm. But it's funny that I write that he ended up making one.
Mm-hmm.
Making two.
Yep.
Did they include any of these songs in the other one?
There are no singing parts in the remake in Alice in Wonderland and Alice Through the Looking Glass. It's just a complete score movie.
Yeah, it's just a...
I mean, they may have just taken some of the songs that were supposed to be written for it and just made it into scores. I don't think there is a single one.
Would they do another remake of this, you think?
No.
I would really hope not.
You'd really hope not? Why?
Because, I mean, I think there are a lot of remakes of this. Like, if you even go on just, like, Netflix and yep. you go mm-hmm. and look up Alice in Wonderland, you're going to find, like, six.
Then there are some from, what is it, that British, what is it, like, BBC? I can't remember what the exact name it is.
What's the tale from? It's a fairy tale, I know that.
It's just Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland.
Yeah, because it was all based off of the book. Yeah. And mm-hmm. they all made their own adaptation of it.
Yep.
And, you know, the most popular one was Disney. Everyone remembers.
It's not
but.
Universally considered the best film. Today it is not only universally considered the best film adaptation of Lewis Carroll's novel, but one of Disney's greatest classics. So now it's saying that it's this, you know, just forget the movie, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The film itself. Music-wise, where does this soundtrack stack up?
As in, like, ranking, like, 1 to 10, like we did with Peter Pan?
Yeah, because, you know, if you, I don't know where you would cut off classics. I cut off classics with the 90s.
Before you really started getting into computer-generated animated movies?
Yeah, like, I don't consider Lilo and Stitch a classic.
I think that one's more modern.
It is. So, Alice is... We can agree that it's a classic.
Well, that was part, like I said last time, it was part of the classic, like, from the 40s, from the 30s to about the late 60s would have been Disney's most classic movies. And from there, it was more... After that, it was more of, like, real-life movies.
And it was billed as a... it was billed as a musical film. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't... It's one of those movies where people don't realize how good it is until they see it. And obviously it's been a while since I've seen this. I mean, it's hard to find these movies nowadays with the vault and everything. But for it to be billed as a musical, you know, Disney doesn't do that much anymore. Mm-hmm. They kind of just, oh, here's a song. As if you're gonna compare it with another Disney movie, what would you compare it with?
like off the wall
music
like this.
Wise, yeah.
I honestly think Peter Pan is the closest musically.
Mm-hmm.
Because it also has the similar like short clips of quote unquote songs,
but also orchestral type music to go along with it.
And with Walt, Walt's touch kind of made that what it was.
Because
mm-hmm. Walt's touch, obviously, you can tell the whimsicalness. Whatever that word.
You can tell when Walt didn't have a hand in the movies anymore. It's kind of like there was a switch mm-hmm. in how they were done.
I don't want to call them soulless because they're not soulless, because I think Frozen and Moana and Tangled have a soul.
I just think it's a different
they're
kind.
They're more meta. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The songs are more meta, where they sound something like you'd hear on the radio, but they mm-hmm. have like a Disney flair to it. It's like a radio song just with a Disney flair, versus when you listen to
something from this that you wouldn't hear on the radio. It'd just be good to have it as a soundtrack.
Like if you listen, like Let It Go was played on the radio at some point. Like I've heard Let It Go on the radio.
Oh yeah, I've heard it a few times.
You would never hear any of this,
mm-hmm.
any of it. And that's not to say it's not a bad soundtrack. I just think it's a different beast because, you know, we're talking. If we would have had a discussion before this and go, what songs do I remember from this movie? Like I said, I think the last one where I don't know any of these songs, but I look at them, I'm like, okay, I know I'm late. I know that. That's it. Like, I know I'm late, and I know the Caterpillar song, and I don't remember how any of these songs go.
I remember all of them, basically. I just, when I looked at, like, the song list from the movie,
yeah.
I didn't realize how many of them they actually considered a song,
because
they were just little snippets.
It was probably their way of including, like it said in the history, including them without cutting them out. Like I was looking at the music thing and it says it had a date for like when they started writing this stuff, and that to me is insane to begin with. 1939, this dude Frank Churchill was assigned to compose songs, and they were accompanied by a story reel featuring artwork. So, and it says, although none of his songs were used in the finished film, the melody for the Lobster Quadrille was used for the song Never Smiled a Crocodile in Peter Pan. So this is something that I think that's very interesting with these with music now.
Damn phone.
Can we keep that in there? We should know.
Disney music nowadays doesn't. I don't think they use certain tunes from other movies just so they can say they have something. I'm noticing now that they were like, okay, if we're not going to use this song for this movie, let's reword it and let's put it in this one.
I think they did that for the Jungle Book for one of them.
What I'm saying is nowadays.
Oh, nowadays.
Like now they wouldn't have done that because a Moana song's not going to fit in Frozen.
No. Yeah.
Or Frozen's not going to fit in Moana, or Tangled's not going to fit in those things. If you were going to take one of these songs and change it into something for a modern movie, which one would you take out and change? I can tell you right now, I'm Late would fit perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why.
I'm trying to think, because they're all, in my opinion, they all just, like, fit Alice in Wonderland very well. So it's hard for me to take them from that movie and put them in another one.
I guess that's the point I'm trying to make, too, mm-hmm. is because if it fits as a whole, why change it? And that's my argument with remakes, is that you're taking the soul of that movie and trying to replicate it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't replicate it.
Nope. I mean, the Tim Burton adaption ones were okay.
That's
but,
the key word. They're okay. They're not the
but
same.
It's still not thought about as much as
one. I think you also have to take a step back and realize that the Tim Burton, quote, remakes weren't exactly remakes. Like, the first one that he did, which was just, you know, Alice in Wonderland, it wasn't her as a child anymore. It was her grown up going back to Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Tim Burton. Yeah. I don't think Tim Burton was trying to remake it. I think he was just trying to kind of like add to the storyline.
And it's also just the style of the movie himself. He's always been like. Tim Burton's style of movies, if we're thinking Tim Burton, we're thinking Beetlejuice. We're thinking Michael Keaton Batman movie. We're thinking
freaky movies.
We're thinking Mars Attacks, Corpse Bride. We're thinking all of that. And it's just, like, they are good movies. They're good action movies, don't get me wrong, but we don't really talk about them anymore, but this movie still gets talked about. Like, I'm pretty sure that the Lion King remake that we just got done having, and it's in theaters now, people are going to talk about it for a short period of time, but everybody's going to remember the animated.
It won't stand the test of time, no, to be honest with you.
Just like these Alice in Wonderland movies, if you grew up watching them, well, congratulations. But they're not going to stand the test of time. But this one, what was this movie made? 51. So you're thinking, what about 60, almost 70 years later, that movie still is thought about as one of the classics?
It's a good movie, and like I said, it's wild. It's just weird. If we're gonna rank it on like a top 10 scale of like Disney movies from like the 90s and the classics and stuff, it's not in my top. Well, I mean, there's probably 10 movies in that, so it's probably near the bottom for me. Not because I don't like the music, but because the movie just doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't make me feel emotions like Second Star of the Right does from Peter Pan, or heck, it doesn't do anything for me like just put Toy Story in that category because it was 95. It doesn't do anything like Strange Things, or I Will Go Sailing No More. You know, those are meme-worthy songs.
Out There from Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Or Go the Distance from Hercules. You know, those songs do something for me emotionally. And then I'll even put in there with Snow White. Snow White has Silly Song. And Silly Song is...
That's your ringtone, man.
That's the reason why I love Bashful so much, the dwarf, because he plays that accordion and he just says something stupid about a cat coming up a tree and clawing him in the eye. It's a weird, quirky song, but I like that kind of weird quirkiness more than I like Alice quirkiness.
Because that whole movie's just quirkiness. Snow White being the first one, that was just that one little silly song.
It's a wild movie. Mm-hmm. It's... Alice is one of those things where you really have to, I hate to say this, you have to watch it high. Because you have to watch it high, you have to watch it drunk, you have to watch it.
I'm going to have to disagree with that, because I don't think I was high or drunk at 8 years old watching it.
You have, like, I think as a kid you watch it and you're like, you're almost like,
it's like a happy movie for kids, but then as adults when you watch, you're like,
it's also kind of freaky for kids, if I'm being completely honest, because if you think about it, at the end of the movie when she's saying, like, when she's singing the good advice and she's saying how, you know, should have taken my mother's advice and, you know, just stayed home and not gone on this crazy adventure, and like, she's lost and all that stuff. So, I mean.
And that's the thing about this movie that has always bothered me is I never understand what's happening. Like, the whole time I'm like, okay, why is this happening? What is going on? And I know it's a dream. Mm-hmm. I think, and that's why the music, I think, works the way it does, is because it's dream sequence stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Her falling down that rabbit hole, her, you know, like, all that stuff is like, you almost wonder what drug they were on when they made this movie. But yet at the same time, you know, music-wise, we're rereading the history. They had storyboards in front of them while they made this. So the music was composed that way. Nowadays, they just film it and they give it to the composer, right? And they just let them compose it?
Mm-hmm. Well, from that? It depends on what type of movie it is. I think often what they'll do is the directors will go to them and like, hey, this is kind of what I want. Let's figure something out. And then after that, the director will give them a script for the movie. They'll give them a screenplay and a play-by-play. And just be like, hey, this is what I want. Figure something out. Come back in about a couple of weeks and we'll see what you got.
Yeah, that's just...
Because I know, because like, even though this is an off-topic thing, but I know that George Lucas and Steven Spielberg did the exact same thing with John Williams when they were doing Jaws and when they were doing the first Star Wars movie.
And you know, those things are, when you talk about composing music for movies, you know, I don't sit here and go, all right, well, I'm like you see what I'm doing right now. I'm having a look and see who composed this.
Yeah.
Like, I can't tell you off the top of my head who composed this. But if you go, oh, okay, well, we're going to listen to Star Wars soundtrack, John Williams.
You know John Williams and London and the London Symphony Orchestra.
And I think that's why I really, really love movies like Peter Pan and Pinocchio and those, because they were composed by people that weren't necessarily known.
Well, I'm about to say the same. Like, a lot of, like, the same people that you just mentioned who did Pinocchio also did, like, these type of movies. They also did Snow White. They also did just, like, the classic animated movies. So, for them to be able to have a different vision for each one and know for, I would say from a standing point of view, as for me, no Disney soundtrack sounds the same to me. Like, the animated purposes-wise, all of them have a very different feel to them.
That's on purpose. Mm-hmm. It clearly is, just because, I don't know, like, since you weren't on the Peter Pan one, and you heard us record that, if you've seen Peter Pan, you said you compared it to Peter Pan, there's nowhere near as many songs in Peter Pan than there are in Alice. But I think, I don't know if you heard us talk about it, but in Alice, y'all will know, I haven't seen it in so long, do they actually sing those songs?
Yes.
So, because in Peter Pan, like we said, there's only like three of them they sing.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, do they sing all of this?
Yes.
Most of them they do. There's at least some dialogue in them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are just the background kind of thing, but
the vast majority,
it's a character singing it.
Came out on July 28th, 1951. Re-released on February 3rd, 1998. And
my grandmother was a couple of months old.
And, like, you know, I think you had mentioned it was like, there were short pieces. Like, you got 23 seconds.
Yep.
A minute and 14.
Mm-hmm.
A-I-O-U, Who Are You, How Doth the Little Crocodile Keep Your Temper. They're all in 4 minutes and 34
yep.
seconds. A minute and 9. They're all super duper short.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Except I'm late is like 30 seconds.
Yeah, except for the Walrus and the Carpenter
yeah.
and then the last song at the very end.
But that's because it's a blend of
yeah.
all of the different songs in the movie. It's like them all coming together. It's her waking up, so they're
mm-hmm.
revisiting everything.
And then the Walrus and the Carpenter is just one big story.
Yeah, it's just a story. That's all that one is.
There's just so much. We could probably sit here all day and really discuss the music of this movie. And you know, honestly, the ride at Disneyland is often called the best dark ride that exists because of just the perfect blending of story and music and everything. And I obviously, like I said, it's not my favorite, but, you know, for some people, it really is.
I almost wonder if the reason why this movie had so much of, like, the music was all the way through it, if that kind of goes back to when movies first started. They were silent films, and they only had music.
Yeah, I wonder. It was an older one. Well, see, when did Snow White, 39, right?
Snow White came out in 39.
What was next?
Next was Pinocchio... Then either Victory Through the Air. No. Victory Through the Air. I think it was Victory Through the Air. And then you had Dumbo, Bambi. Gosh, what else did you have?
The point I'm asking that is what you just said. You know, back then, those movies or
all
they were silent
have,
had music.
Yeah, all of them have, like, all of the classic Disney movies, they
mm-hmm.
all have music. All the way through them.
Well, I think
like, even if you don't
I
realize
think the reason
it.
For that is Disney was just that the whole aspect of your imagination, like that's what Disney was about.
It's still that.
It's about his whole imagination, still about that, and that's why he added a lot of movies for it. Because if you so going back to, I think it was the first King Kong movie. The first King Kong movie came out in 1935, I want to say. And I think that was the first real time that they were able to add, like they added audio to it. They were able to add the music on an audio track instead of having an orchestra play it live in front of the stage. Like, just even something classic like that. Okay.
It's Snow White in 37.
December. Snow White 37.
Pinocchio 1940. Fantasia 1940.
That's the one I was
Dumbo 41. Bambi 42. Saludos Amigos 43. Three Caballeros 45. Make Mine Music 46. Fun and Fancy Free 47. Melody Time 48. Ichabod and Mr. Toad 49. That's one we'll have to sit here and do, to be honest with you, because I love Ichabod and Mr. Toad. Cinderella 50, Alice in Wonderland 51, Peter Pan 53, Lady and the Tramp 55, Sleeping Beauty 59, 101 Dalmatians 61, Sword and Stone 63, Jungle Book 67, Aristocat 70, Robin Hood 73, Winnie the Pooh 77, Rescuers, Fox and the Hound, Black Cauldron, Great Mouse Detective, Oliver and Company. You know, that like to kind of prove your point, they were doing silly symphonies that were literally just cartoons with music. So I do wonder if it was just like a blend. All right, let's see if we can go back to that, but also make them a little bit more dialogue, too, and add
modern.
Some. Yeah, make it more modern. A perfect blend, I guess, is the way I describe that.
I also wonder if that was just what Walt Disney did, because that was something that him growing up, that was something that he always had, as like music with films and such.
And that's why just going back and just reading that history of those animated movies, they were all music. Yep. Like
Black Cauldron does not have any singing parts in it whatsoever, but that score is a very dark score for a Disney movie, but it fits it so perfectly. Fits it perfectly.
Like Fantasia in 40.
I would say even to go like for Fantasia wise to blend
so
it in with the animation is one of the best.
Everything is
Disney
just
films.
It was one hit after another.
Mm-hmm.
Just and that's why like when we get to 51, you know, they had just done Cinderella the year before.
Yep.
And then Alice in Wonderland. I love to put myself in their shoes, the audience's shoes, when they see these movies for the first time. And I'm like, what did they think when they walked out and listened to that?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, when I walked out of Mary Poppins Returns and I heard, you know, Trip a Little Light Fantastic and a lot of those new songs, I'm like, yes, I love that soundtrack. And
yeah,
I
love the soundtrack for that.
And back then, what were they thinking when they walked out of Alice? They were like, what the heck was this? What was that? What did I just watch?
Mm-hmm.
Just insurmountable amount of probably just craziness. And after Alice was Peter Pan.
Yeah.
So a lot of that
craziness.
And then Lady and the Tramp, which was pretty normal.
Yeah.
Talking dogs, of course.
Lady and the Tramp was more of like it was more of like a slow type love animal Disney movie.
It's just wonderful, wonderful music from Alice on. Just everything that Walt produced
mm-hmm.
from the beginning on was so great. You know, his last one he really produced was Jungle Book.
Mm-hmm.
And then Aristocats came out on Christmas Eve, 1970. He wasn't on that anymore. Obviously, his health had kind of declined and he passed away. I guess kind of to sum things up, just kind of finish it out here. How important is Alice's soundtrack to you personally? Do you listen to it often? Is it something that you have on your a regular listening schedule? Do you listen to it a lot? Or is it something that when you hear it, you're like, oh, okay, that's Alice. And you just kind of go, oh, whatever.
Well, I personally, I like to, whenever I'm like super busy or when like I don't know, when I'm super stressed out or something, I like to go back and listen to Disney music in general.
Yeah.
Because it's just something that's like, oh, yeah, that's
a blend
fun.
Of it.
Yeah, blend. But it's just something that's like fun and takes you back to just like, oh, this is a non-stressful thing for me. Just, you know, you can sing along to basically all of them. I like to listen to specifically from Alice in Wonderland. I like to listen to A World of My Own or Painting the Roses Red or Unbirthday. I also really like when the Queen is like involved in things. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just think that's hilarious. But I don't like specifically just listen to Alice in Wonderland. I like to listen to all of them, but Alice in Wonderland's definitely one of my favorites.
I do often listen to it because it makes 1 hour and 15 minutes go by fast at work. I normally try to find a bunch of albums I can listen to at work and just listen to them throughout the day, because, like I said, you listen to four albums that are an hour and a half, that's basically my entire work day, is just listening to music. But Alice in Wonderland is definitely one of the ones, one of the few that I will go back to anytime I put a Disney soundtrack on my phone to listen to while I'm at work.
Yeah, I think that's definitely because the whole soundtrack, it all, like, blends together, because it's the movie.
It's the movie, so just in sound form.
Listening to just that one soundtrack, I think it passes the time really well.
It sure does.
I was about to say, same thing, if you are able to find the movie and able to put it in MP3 format, the entire movie,
it would be basically also the same thing.
It's the same thing.
I did that, and just listening to the whole entire movie in MP3 format, you can actually sit there while you're listening to it, actually know exactly what's going on.
Yep.
Like, normally I will listen, I'll watch movies if I'm doing something, if I'm writing notes down or something, and I've seen these movies a gazillion times, I know what's going on, but listening to them without any TV, without anything, just that sound itself, you can hear and picture in your own mind what is going on, and you know precisely what's getting ready to happen, what song is getting ready to be played, what actions are getting ready to be done, what is going on then and there.
And me personally is like a choir kid and always like loving that sort of feeling of music. It's also very like interesting to me to be able to listen to it and be like, oh, that's this with this. And
I miss those choruses in those old school Disney movies.
Yeah, I miss how it was just like you could tell just listening to it, each individual component, and didn't all sound like it was all like made all at once. It's, you can hear everything individual, especially when the flowers are all singing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite things to listen to, because it's a choir.
Yeah.
And it's gorgeous.
That's what I loved about the original Disney movies itself, was when they first began doing the, when they first started opening the books, like you're getting ready to jump into a fairy tale, they had nothing but choruses singing that part all the way through. And that's what, just that whole entire thing is just great in itself.
They don't do it anymore. No, they definitely don't.
Everything is very computer oriented now.
Mm-hmm. All of it's basically computer oriented.
But it's always interesting to go back, and if you can go on YouTube and just look up like the process of how they made the movie, and you see this giant orchestra with you know, all these members in it, and
that's why I like Mary Poppins Returns, because of the way that orchestra is and the vocal parts are written. It brings back a little bit of the old flair they had. And I wonder if we'll get a movie like that ever again, strictly because of how, I hate to say how poor it did, but it did do poorly. It wasn't because it wasn't a bad movie. It just didn't get good. People didn't go watch it, because it's basically the same movie, just redone. It's basically a remake, just her returning and whatever without Julie Andrews, and that kind of stinks. But I wonder in this day and age if we'll ever see a movie like Alice again, if we'll ever see a movie like Peter Pan or any of these weird ones that no one goes and sees ever. They won't do it.
I don't think we will, because like a lot of people are not happy with The Lion King.
No, and that's not.
I know it's not. I know it's not their fault. It's just how that movie is. How
it's the computer. It's the animation. It's the emotion. It is.
Movie was written. I do believe that Disney has a very strong handheld hold on it when it comes to what they want from a director, and we can't like bash the director
because
that's how he was given. That's what the idea he was given.
Yep.
But I don't think we'll see another one like this, because they will try to modernize it way too much.
Yep, they will.
And these, like some of these Disney classics, they do not need to be modernized.
No.
Because if you modernize them, they're not going to do well at all.
That's why I'm worried if they do a remake of Peter Pan. I'm worried if they do a remake of Pinocchio, because I don't. They're not going to replicate that soul.
And a lot of it goes back to a lot of the things that were acceptable back then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're not even close to being acceptable.
We talked
now.
About that with Peter Pan's song, What Made the Red Man Red, last week. Yeah. How it was just 100% racism.
Oh, it's completely racist.
And that's, they would never do that again.
Nope.
But I think Alice would be acceptable in today's culture because of a lot of the stuff that Alice shows and the colors and the brightness of it. It's more of a meta movie now because people love that throwback stuff. And I think that's why Disney does these remakes, especially with these soundtracks.
I still think they would have to change some things about Alice.
Yeah, they'd have to change something because they're in this business of changing
out
things.
They'd have to figure out a way to make that caterpillar not look stoned.
No, I think they could keep that, honestly.
If they can keep Mufasa dying in The Lion King.
The caterpillar.
If they can keep the fire from Scar and all that stuff, Scar getting eaten by hyenas, if they can keep all of that, then they can keep that.
Yeah.
That's just my two cents.
I mean, I think the reason why people liked Alice in Wonderland so much and still do today is that Alice was something different.
Oh, yeah.
In a world where everything was so normal. And it even shows that in the beginning where her mother is very prim and proper and she's just saying, I want to go somewhere else. I want to go somewhere where I don't have to do all
describing
that.
Describing the world that she wants to be in.
Yeah.
That's right.
Personally, that's why I love the movie, is it's something different. She says, like, if I had a world of my own.
Yeah.
Something that she could control, not something where she was being controlled.
Well, this has been a great conversation about Alice, and I appreciate all of you guys listening. I appreciate you guys for your input on Alice, because I'm not the biggest Alice person in the world. I have, like I said, no emotional attachment to it whatsoever, so it's nice to have people that do love it.
Buy it on Blu-ray, buy it on Blu-ray.
And if you're able to, like, we were listening to it. I mean, it's an okay soundtrack. It's good. It's just not my top 10. It's just not. And that's fine. It's just me. It's just how it is.
You have to like classical music
a
lot.
You really do. Which I'm not saying I don't. I think that, I don't know. It's weird. I'd have to listen. I'm going to have to listen to it again. I really am. I'm going to have to listen to it again. Well, again, thank you, Tyler. Tyler, my co-host over here.
Always, always, always.
And Carson, thank you so much for being here.
Of course.
And, yes. And we hope you love Alice in Wonderland, too. And reach us at themusicalmousepodcast@gmail.com. And also find us on Twitter @themusicalmouse. Thank you guys for listening to where here the music is the magic. Have a great day.